the first one in that calendar is not the true time. The true nature of immortality is not existing in the mind, only after the mind. And a person, however, a person searches in his desire for immortality, really what he's trying to do, see, the rest of the things are good. There is something that Kehelis understood, and that without this concept, I don't think that that Kehelis can become clear. There's a difference between the Greek philosophers and between Kehelis. In that the Greek philosophers, many of the ideas of the Greek philosophers are correct. As the Rambam mentions, in his Hagdamatri Rotesh Mishnayot, a lot of the ideas were correct. But the difference, the essential difference between the Greek philosophers and between Kehelis, and really which is a part of our philosophy, the philosophy of Yadus, is that the Greek philosophers just were only concerned with what the reality is. In other words, what is the correct way for man to live? What is the true way of life? Yadus is concerned with more than that. And Kehelis is also. Unless you really approach it the way Yadus does, the person will not be able to get a total picture of the reality. Because Yadus maintains that it's not just philosophy that's important, but also human psychology. And you really can't separate the two. The two are inseparable. And unless you straddle both fields, really can't arrive at a philosophy which can be of benefit to mankind. You can prove to a person logically that the way he's living is wrong, but that's all you can do. You can't take him any further after that. The only way to really take him further is by investigating the area of the human mind and demonstrating and showing precisely wherein lies the problem and why a person is irrational. You don't pinpoint that point of irrationality in man, you really are going to help him. And you can disprove his the common man's ideas, can be disproven. And that's what Socrates basically did. Socrates disproved the common man's values and showed that they're in conflict and in contradiction. But that alone will not really help the people. Because while it's true that you've shown to his intellect that his way of life is not the correct one, you still have not shown him where he goes wrong and what the problem is in terms of his psychic motor, in which direction his energy is being driven, or why it's being driven in that direction. As long as you don't do that, you really haven't reached the person. You can't really achieve the person. But Kehelis is different. It's different than philosophy in that it takes into consideration, to a great extent, human psychology. And it maintains that without human psychology, you really can't resolve the issue. You must take into consideration human psychology. So really, Kehelis is philosophical psychology. That's what it is. Philosophical psychology. In contradistinction to the Greek philosophers, which is just philosophy. Many of their ideas are correct. None of them. The Ruach HaChomim that arrived at the two ideas, which Yadus also expounds, the philosophers recognize that the life of Chayva is a wasteful life. They recognize that the only good life for man is a life of knowledge, pursuit of wisdom, Chachma, and they were very averse. The philosophers were very averse to a life of physical pleasure and catering to the emotions. They were right about that. They were right. I mean, Socrates walked barefoot in the snow. He didn't care about comfort. He didn't care about convenience. And he was right in recognizing that the only real life in man is the life of the mind. It's true. But he didn't show why it's so difficult for a person to see that. He didn't show what the dilemma is, what the problem is. What he was saying was, if I'll show you why it's, if I'll show you that it's wrong, so then you'll be able to correct it. But it doesn't work that way. to improve ourselves? And what should we do when we feel, when we see that we see the true ideas and we fail? So how do we, what do we do then? When we see what the truth is, but your nature still goes ahead in its natural way. I mean, what do you do then? So his answer was, let the charma charm you. Which means that you should repeat, think of the ideas over again. And this will charm you into the true way of life. Yadus doesn't deny that there is such a phenomenon, but it maintains it's not enough. That is not enough. That will not do it. Unless you really have a deep understanding of what's wrong with your machinery and how it's working, and precisely understand how it's working in the wrong direction, and you're not going to be able to make that change. One of the ideas that Tehelis is, what's a necessary idea underlying Tehelis is, that the human mind is very tricky. Very tricky. It's a pasuk in another. Another says, "Ukov halev mikol v'anasher." The heart is crooked, more crooked than anything else. V'anasher, and v'anasher means it is in a bad state. Mi yedoinu, who can know? The others recognize that the way of a person's psyche is a distorted one, and it's very devious and deceitful, and therefore it's difficult for man to really understand exactly what drives the psyche and how it works. But one of the principles, one of the important principles that one of the important principles is precisely that, namely that we assume certain things very vaguely, and we tend to not to understand precisely what the underlying instinctual nature is and what we're really after. What our underlying nature is and what we're really after. And we fool ourselves through these disguises. And we think that we think one thing of our intentions, but really, if we analyze it really deeply, we see that it's something else. And that's the idea of the idea of immortality. And most people's idea of immortality, of Olam Haba, is really not exactly what Olam Haba really is all about. Because the fantasy of immortality is an emotional thing, which is really, its underlying aim is to preserve the enjoyment that a person has in this world. You can see it in primitive man. In primitive man, it's more undisguised. Because in primitive man, you see that he searches the Indian is looking for the happy hunting ground. You see the Mohammedans are looking for a river that flows with wine and where he has sexual enjoyment. So in the primitive forms, if you look at the primitive forms of immortality, it's more clear, it's more undisguised. But even in a person who is more sublimated, who's on a higher level, he may not outrightly say that that's what he's after. What he's after those things. But his underlying drive for immortality is based upon the same root, namely that he wishes to extend his physical existence. Of course, he realized that it's a spiritual thing, the body is dead. Doesn't make any sense to say that he's more intelligent than the primitive man. Doesn't make any sense to say that he's going to enjoy the physical life after when his body's becoming dead. But he still, in his mind, you see, in his mind, a trick is played, and he conceives of a more ethereal enjoyment. In other words, one that's more removed from the physical, but at the bottom, really, is still the same emotion. And therefore, he's really far removed from the true concept of Olam Haba. That's what Kehelet says in that pasuk. And he says, Miyadea. Miyadea means, very few people know what Olam Haba really is, even though you have a lot of believers in Olam Haba. But there are very few people that know, Nefesh Ha'odam Ha'olah 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 Ha'olah. These very few people have been able to purify themselves to the degree that they have an accurate idea of what Olam Haba is, and that they really have a desire for that type of an existence. Most people just fool themselves. So insofar as a person is searching for a physical type of immortality, right? So he judges everything. His whole value system is based on that. So therefore, he has a distorted. He's not in a position to judge what really. He's not in a position to judge the lot of the tzaddik as compared to the lot of the rasha. Because in his analysis of the tzaddik and the rasha, what comes to his mind is what he can't remove from his mind, you see, is that the reward is contaminated with some type of physical underlying enjoyment. So he can't really look at the lot of the tzaddik and the lot of the rasha objectively. But what he's looking for in the tzaddik is some type of physical satisfaction. As much as he denies it, underlying nature, that's why it seems unfair. That's why it seems unfair. That's the basic idea. And he's not an objective observer. There was only one objective observer. That was Kahala. We're going to get into it a little further. I mentioned this once before. The point I'm trying to make is that's why it says, by Kahala, it says that people ask that where he says that he's going to try everything. Galti Masos, and he's built beautiful palaces and brooks and ponds of fish and beautiful gardens, all those things that he made. So a philosopher asks, why does he have to see all those things in order to discover what the truth is? Philosophers don't have to do everything. A philosopher knows they don't have to. You don't have to do engage yourself in all these activities in order to have knowledge of what the right way of life is. You don't have to kill somebody in order to find out whether murder is correct or not. A person doesn't have to jump off a roof to find out that he's going to be harmed. So what kind of a method is that? What the hell is he doing? To try all these different things. Because I'll point out that he tries, the pasuk says, mentions in the text. I'll point out that really the pasuk is just mentioning a few things that he tried, but actually he tried many things. The pasuk doesn't mention. The pasuk is not going to enumerate everything he tried. But the reason is, based upon what we said, that Kahelis, our philosophy differs from the Greek philosophy, and that it maintains that in order to really have a knowledge of life, it's very important to have a knowledge of psychology and an understanding of the emotions. And to understand the emotions requires experimentation. Person requires experience. And to understand ideas of what is right and what is wrong, you don't require experience. All you need is logic. But to really understand how the emotions work, that requires experience. And that's why he actually involved himself in his various activities, and he had certain experiences which he analyzed and was able to understand the nature of the emotions. And until a person understands the nature of the emotions, his philosophy is really is not a very beneficial one. It could be an abstract one, but it really can't be very beneficial because, first of all, he doesn't understand his own emotions, and he's going to be blinded in the areas that he doesn't understand in his investigation. Okay? And secondly, the very investigation is going to be blinded. But besides that, he won't be really have a total picture because he doesn't have the experience. Okay? And that's why Shmuel HaMelech went through all those experiences, and that's why he said that the only thing is, you see, that the Chazal say, the person can't do this. How much more else to do? Why? Because he was able to be objective in his involvement. The average person, if he involves himself in his emotions, is going to be lost because the attraction is so great that he's not going to be able to analyze it. It'll distort his mind to a greater degree. The average person has no choice but to listen to the Chachamim. But the Chachamim of Shlomo was able to do it. And really, it's a pasuk, because the pasuk says, after it tells that everything they did in Beis, all the Tanakh, the Kesher Rezov, the Mohan Dinos, all these various enjoyments that he put together, then it says in Pasuk Tes, Beis Tes, the Gadalti Vasafti Mikol Shehoyal Fana B'Yisrael. It says, and I became greater and I accumulated more than anyone that was before me in Jerusalem. Af Chachmasi Andalei. What does it mean, Af Chachmasi Andalei? But my Chachma stood by me. Meaning to say, that's right, that he wasn't tainted, he wasn't drawn, contaminated by the experience itself. That only a person on his level was able to do. And that's why he emphasizes in the beginning of the Sefer that he was on such a level. He was able to do that. Other person can't do that. But the basic underlying idea is that you can't have a philosophy without understanding emotions. And find another going through the experiences and analyzing the emotions himself. Now, let's just go back. Kahelis is actually like in clusters, in a sense. You have a cluster of ideas here, a cluster of ideas there. To see how the whole scheme, I can't say that I really see how the whole order of the Sefer. I see certain clusters of ideas emerging. I didn't put together the whole thing, but let's take a look at what we can do. Alright? Now, one pasuk gets difficult. Kahelis Aleph Yudgimel. Where it says, "V'nasati es libi lidros v'losu b'chokma akol ha'shanasa tachat ha'shamayim." So it means that he clarified his intention to search and to investigate with knowledge everything that's done under the sun, and all manners of life. He says, "Hu inyan ra." This is a bad thing. Nasan elokim was nehod al marasol. God gave this command to suffer with. What does it mean? It sounds like it's contradictory. I mean, what does it mean? That he made up his mind to investigate Chachma, and that this is a painful thing. This is a bad thing that God gave me to suffer with. I mean, so what's he doing it for? What does it mean? You don't understand what it means. Okay? So I think the Pasuk means like this, that the, what he's saying is that it's a bad thing. What does it mean it's a bad thing? Chachma is not a bad thing. To investigate is a bad thing. To understand the knowledge is a bad thing. It can't be a bad thing. Bad thing, you wouldn't do it. What it means like this. What it means is that the motivation, see, the need and the motivation for searching through Chachma and discovering the right way of life is to man a bad thing. It's something that God gave to man, run ourselves, to suffer with. What does it mean? It means that man is the only creature that is forced to investigate, coerced to investigate as to what the proper way of life is. Why? Because he has no natural instinct which can tell him what is the best way to live. Whereas in the animal kingdom, this problem doesn't exist. Because built into their nature is the proper way for them to live. Their instincts are constructed according to their design, according to their nature, so that they can reach fulfillment. But with man, it isn't that way. Man, his instincts don't help him out. Because he has conflicting, he's in conflict. He has different sources which are vying for satisfaction at the same time. His mind tells him one thing, he has one group of emotions pulling him in one direction, another group pulling him in another direction. Man is in inherent conflict. That is his nature. The nature of man is in his own conflict. That's why happiness is so evasive for man. Because of the fact that his nature is fraught with inherent conflict. And that's why the only thing that he could do is to philosophize and to search for what the best way of life is. And there is no person that is not a philosopher, really. It's impossible for a person not to be a philosopher. Whatever a person does, that means that he must maintain it. That is the proper way to live. And the simple an idea as that is, I think most people don't really comprehend it. Don't understand it. Most people think that they could live a life which is free from any position. In other words, if they're free from any position, they're free thinkers. And in fact, people will say that a person who's a religious person isn't really fit to make judgments, philosophical judgments, if he's biased.
Okay.
But the person who is not religious, I feel, is in a better position to be objective. That's impossible, because whatever a person is, whether he's religious or whether he's not religious, The point is, he is assuming some type of philosophy by the mere fact that he lives and acts a certain way. He has to be saying that this is the proper way to live. Of course, of course. So there is no such thing as a... If he's not sure, then if he's not sure, he still must tentatively do something. He must act and live in a certain way, tentatively. Right. He has to have some consistent pattern. So whatever consistent pattern, unless he's in total contradiction, in which case he's crazy. But I mean, a normal person, he comes home, he enjoys supper, he watches television. He maintains that these physical pleasures are good for me. That's why I'm doing it. If they weren't good for me, he wouldn't do it. So therefore, no. So what I'm saying is that's his philosophy. So he has a philosophy. So the man has a philosophy. So he's in this. Because there was in any of the forms of life, there is no difference, because any person that does something has to maintain that is a good. Whatever he does has to be a philosophy. A philosophy means maintain something as a good. But the moment the person does some type of activity and has some idea in his mind, some consistent idea, which he has to have, otherwise his actions would be erratic, and there wouldn't be any consistency to what he does. He'd be just a crazy person. But a normal person has to have some type of pattern which is based upon some idea. And the moment he does something, that idea has to be the motivating force. Or he is a philosopher. He's forced, he's coerced to be a philosopher. And all the Pasuk says that man is plagued with the need to be a philosopher. Plague. It's a plague. That's what Shlomo Amelech says. Why is it a plague? Because he has no natural means of ascertaining what the proper life is. And there is no such thing. There is no such phenomenon. There were anthropologists who tried to search for a natural way of man to live. That's what they do. Margaret Mead is one of those philosophers. And she tried to find societies where there's a natural way to live. But there's no such phenomenon. Today they recognize that her works were fraudulent. Because she projected onto society what she wanted to say. There's no such phenomenon. There's no such thing as a natural way for man to live. Man lives according to the way he thinks. And he has to think a certain way. And therefore he must be a philosopher. There's no way out of it. There's two types of assumptions. A person could assume that what he knows is absolute truth. You see? What he knows is absolute truth. And even though he does see the truth, like a great scientist sees knowledge, then he's in a good state. In other words, he's in a good position, not a bad position. Even though he'd be inflexible, but that inflexibility is a mile away, not a chassaron. A person who has knowledge of physics is very inflexible about certain notions that are ridiculous. He has to be inflexible because he has knowledge. A person who has knowledge of life has to be inflexible. Because insofar as he knows what the truth is, he can't be flexible about it. Being flexible is not an advantage. Being flexible shows that a person doesn't know what he lacks knowledge. But there's another type of rigidity. That's what I think you're referring to. This type of rigidity which tells a person that he knows when he doesn't know. That is something which is bad. But that rigidity can be found in any form of philosophy. So that type of rigidity doesn't matter the particular philosophy, be he a hedonist, be he a religionist, be he an ascetic, or whatever he might be. But that rigidity is a separate phenomenon. But in terms of the philosophy itself, he has to choose some philosophy. You can't just say, a person can't say, I don't know. If he doesn't, he could say it. But he has to come to a decision. He's coerced to come to a decision. Otherwise, he can't move. He can't get out of bed. He can't do anything. He's coerced by life itself. Coerced him to be a philosopher. So that's what. No, he says it's a bad thing. It's bad. It's a defect. It's a defect in man. Wouldn't it be better if a person would naturally be attracted to what he wouldn't have to go study his nature and study philosophy, but he'd naturally do what the good is. That would be the best reason for man. I mean, everybody has to admit that. You have to be crazy man not to admit that. So that's the question, but since God made it that way, that it was the best way. this is. Yeah, but you can't ask that. That type of a question is not an appropriate one. Because, then you're going into metaphysics. The metaphysics of God's creation is a different area. In other words, that has to do with God's, with God and the fact that he creates and how he creates. But the particular creation, if you want to analyze man's life, you have to analyze man's life insofar as it is, insofar as it's man's life. Forget about God in the metaphysics of the metaphysical aspect. Metaphysical aspect is the study of God, and they study man. As far as man's concerned, it's bad. It's an Indian rod, it's a bad thing. It's frustrating, it's a struggle. Life is a struggle. That's why it's a struggle. It's not a good thing, it's a bad thing. Okay. So that's what he says. That's what motivated him to investigate, all right? And now he continues with the same idea, but he shows what the first step is. Right? He says the first step is let me leave about something without solace. He says, what is that if you should gamzu right on Ruach? Keep lying, it's a bad thing. He says, keep a rove, chokhmo rove, chos, the Yosef das, Yosef macho. He means to say that when that's the end of the Aleph. He means to say like this, what happens is first he tells you why he has to investigate, and then it's bad that we have to even begin to investigate. But then he says in the investigation, what happens in the beginning is a very bad thing. Because the more, before a person learns about his nature, so he can have the illusion that what he's doing is right. But once he gains knowledge and he sees how his innermost emotions are not in line with reality, and he recognizes that what his life really is, the more knowledge he gains of life, then the more frustrated he becomes, because the more hopeless the situation is. He understands his psyche, he understands how reality is not really in line with his desires. And that, and the more knowledge he gains of reality, the more futile the attempt seems to be of achieving any satisfaction within the framework of his own emotional desire. And his mind works against him. That's the end of the first. The end of Allah. What he's saying is. Of course, you know these talking already. I'm not talking. I'm just correcting them. But what he's saying is that insofar as a person maintains his initial aim of his psychic energy, the more knowledge he gains, the more frustrated he becomes. And the thing is, insofar as he maintains, there's a certain path that the psychic energy takes naturally. That natural path. The more knowledge a person gains, the more he becomes depressed. Because the more he sees that the natural path leads to frustration and unhappiness. Because there's no satisfaction in following that natural path. The less knowledge he has, so he can delude himself into thinking that he's going to achieve something. Of course, in reality he won't, but at least there's a delusion, momentary delusion. But the moment he uncovers that delusion, then he leads him to depression. Okay? I think Sigmund Freud, the great psychologist, said towards the end of his life, he referred to life as a senseless existence. Okay? That's what it means. Yesus das, Yesus machos. Senseless. Okay? He's all the things that he desires are inherently going to cause him frustration. Doesn't have the fancy of hoping anymore that it's going to bring him a satisfaction.
That's what it means.
Ryan Ruff means. The term Ryan Ruff and Rush Ruff, what it means is when a person reaches a stage of total frustration. Okay. You despair. That's what it is.
Okay?
What I'm saying is that it's divided into two parts. First of all, he tells you that the investigation itself, the undertaking of the investigation stands from a defect in man. And secondly, he tells you that the moment you undertake the investigation, it leads to a frustrating conclusion. Those are the two points. Okay. Now he says, then he goes through the experiment, okay? And he goes through the experiment and he says that it's, he takes a look at it and he says that there is no, that there is no Yisron. Yisron, of course, the word Yisron, of course, means the Yisron means the ultimate fantasy that man has of achieving satisfaction. That's what Yisron really means. There's an ultimate fantasy that a person has that somehow or other, sometime, is going to really be satisfied. So that's the Yisron is looking for. So it says that after he did all these things, after he had the experiences, he says he took a look and he saw, no, the Yisron isn't there. On the contrary, it's he's left in a state of frustration. That's the fantasy that everybody goes through, most people throughout life, and thinking that the next success is going to bring them happiness, and they keep on going from one to the other, one success to the other. But he went through all the experiences, and when he came to the end, the ultimate success, which there is no greater one, then he concluded that the experience, when he analyzed his emotions, he saw that there was no satisfaction there. And this fantasy of the Yisron will not be satisfied. Okay? Then he says like this. Then in Yud-Bez, he says, "Ufanisiani liros chokma v'harlos v'sichlos." He says, "Kineho adam sheyavo achrei hamalach esach shekvar asuhu." It's an interesting passage. What does it mean? It means because who is man that comes after the king? The passage Yud-Bez. Bez Yud-Bez. Okay? He says, who is the man? Because what is man that he comes after Achrei HaMelech? He comes after the king has already made everything. What does he mean by that? What does he mean he comes after the king after he has made everything? What does he mean? He means like this. He means that a person, you see, when a person embarks on a philosophy, so the way a person, what motivates him is to find happiness. That's the motivation. But the point is that a person has no right to try to discover happiness because of his human framework. In other words, he has no right to say that this is the way things should be because he has those desires. Why? Because he is not the center. He is not the center of existence. Existence has already been laid down by God. The king has already established it. And now he is a mere existence in the framework of the king. So he has no right to decide that it should be this way or it should be that way. Okay. Because he comes after the Melech. You understand what I mean? Yeah, I'll listen to this. Okay. All right. What he's saying is like this: that after the first part, what he's saying is that he found that he was totally frustrated in terms of the natural way that his emotions were leading him. Okay, the emotions follow a certain natural pattern that led to frustration. Now he says like this: now ufanisiani liros chokma v'holos v'sichlos. Now he takes a look and he wants to analyze what is chokma, what is holos, what is sichlos. What are all these different experiences in life? Knowledge, following a person's enjoyments, merriment, different types of satisfactions, pleasures. So he says, which means to say this, in his first investigation, what he did was he was investigating the natural way that man's energy follows. Now he says, no, but I can't. A person cannot try to look for happiness based upon his own emotional nature and maintain that his nature should lead to, well, this is the way it should be. In other words, my results should be in this area. The investigation cannot be prejudiced by his nature. You understand what I'm saying? The investigation can't be prejudiced. Most people's investigation, the first part, if people investigate, this is the first part they'll get to. Always they'll investigate within, you know, try to make some type of logical, person's reasonable, try to make some type of reasonable analysis of life. But the point that they do is they're making that reasonable analysis within the framework of their drive. You understand what I mean? In other words, it's a foregone conclusion that the answer is supposed to be in this realm. They're assuming the answer must be in this realm. That's a low level of investigation. Because what he's saying is that
to agree with you.
You know who's guilty? I feel this way. I'm just giving you as an example. You don't have to agree with me, but I feel that the existentialists are guilty of that type of philosophy. The existentialists are guilty of that type of philosophy because what they maintain is that the solution has to lie in terms of their in terms of their own nature, the way they experience and the way they feel for it.
Okay.
The reality has to be according to that, according to their experiences. Their internal experiences have to be the basis of reality. So that means that the investigation is already takes on as a foregone conclusion that it has to find its solution in this framework. You see? And that was what he did until that point. They maintain, in other words, that what they, all these experiences that they have, religious experiences, these types of, various types of experiences, that has to be, that's reality. Naturally, it becomes everybody's reality. If you don't have those experiences, then you're not, then you're lacking your nature. So you're lacking your reality. That's what they maintain. Right? But what they do is they philosophize their experiences. That's already a person that doesn't say, that's a person that maintains that the answer, the solution has to lie, has to reside within my framework. So therefore his emotional framework is the, he can't go outside that framework. Right. See, what they're saying is that the happiness of a person has to be, there has to be a real happiness that is in line with this feeling of happiness and the ideas of happiness that he has, that he naturally has. And that's the reality. And then I proceed to philosophize. Okay? He's distinguishing between a person that's totally irrational, which means he can't pursue any wisdom or any knowledge at all, you see, or a person who can't pursue it, but his framework is always going to be along the natural course of his psychic energy. He's convinced he has to find happiness within that. But the point that he's making is that he had to remove himself. That's why I said, "Phonisi ani liros chokma valos sikla." Who is man that comes after the king, and who is he to establish that this is the that he's the measure of all things, and that things must conform to his framework and to his nature? So a person must be able to extract himself from his own nature and be able to say, maybe my nature is corrupt. Maybe there is no happiness. Maybe the whole way that man is constructed is completely crazy, and it's impossible logically to find a solution for it. But not to posit that the way my emotions run, the way my sensuality runs, therein lies the answer. Because then you're saying that you are the measure of all things. But no, Neho Adam, Shiva Akhre Amalak, Hashem Shekhar Azu. Amalak has already created the reality. And you are just the person that lives in that, you're a small part of that reality. So you have to be able to investigate, to look at yourself in terms of being a small part of a total picture. And therefore, you have to be able to look at yourself objectively from the outside without catering to your need for happiness, or your desires and your need for happiness. Okay? Yes. Excuse me? I don't know. You have to be an honest investigator. Maybe you can't be happy. Maybe you can't. What? That's why it's difficult for a person to... That's precisely why it's difficult for a person to do this. Because he has to entertain that possibility. If he wants to be an honest investigator, he must entertain that possibility. As long as he doesn't entertain that possibility, it means he's a prejudiced investigator. Okay? That's precisely the point. Coming after the king means that the assumption must be that I won't find an happy. Maybe there is no happy. Basically, I'm talking about the philosophy of the existentialists endow their feelings with cosmic importance, which means that's not Kimeldam Shirakar Mela. They are the Mela. That's it. They're the measure of all things. That type of a philosophy is a prejudiced philosophy. I'm only bringing it as an example. You could say that the essential objective thinkers and the conclusion they come to through investigation. I'm not arguing existentialism here. I'm just giving it as an example. Yeah. I'm not not saying, because I'm not interested in this point in saying which philosophy is right, which philosophy is wrong. Just using it as an example. There is such an existentialism. Over here, the Melech means God. Rashi knows that way for sure. They all went away. Melech over here means Malchus Shalom, means God. Okay. That follows very nicely what he says after this follows very nicely. So now there's a turn in his investigation. Now once he makes that turn, then the conclusion, then the next few can follow directly. What follows after that, after he makes that turn? Once he abandons the premise that he has to find his own happiness, okay, that it must be guaranteed, and he must find it, and he looks at it objectively, then you see what happens. What does he find? He says like this. He finds Ra'isi Anishi Yesh Yisrael L'chachman HaSechlis Yisrael L'chachman HaKhashah. Yeah, there's a tremendous benefit to wisdom. And then he goes through HaKhachah Le'edavar Enav V'roshah HaKhashah HaKhashah HaKhashah. So he says, tremendous benefit to wisdom. There's nothing like human wisdom. That's what we spoke about last week. There's nothing as great as wisdom. Wisdom, man can uncover the greatest ideas to a Chachman. There's no comparison. The greatest thing that man has. There's nothing else that you could point to besides Chachman. The only thing that man can point to is Chachman. That's the only thing that he has that he can point to and say that this is of value. Any person. What could a person say about human life? Is there anything to point to and say that it has a value? There's only one thing that we know for sure, that man has a value, that a man is able to do something with. And that's wisdom. And today, of course, you can see it more because there's more technology. But you don't need that much technology to draw that conclusion. Today it's much easier to see that conclusion. But everything that man has accomplished, that man has done, anything he has done, is all he has done only through one mechanism, and that's his mind. So therefore, he says, you can see how great that faculty is. How great that, now he's looking, but he's not looking anymore for happiness, he's just looking objectively. Objectively, he's looking at man. What is man? What does he have of value? There's only one thing we know for sure, that's wisdom. There's nothing else. Everything else that you try, any other method that has been tried to give man a benefit has failed. There's only one thing that hasn't failed, and that is Chachma. That's the one thing to point to and say, yes, there's something there. But if there was nothing there, we'd never be able to do what we've done. Okay? That's what he's saying. That's what he's saying. In terms of what man has accomplished. In terms of progress, in terms of understanding, in terms of medicine, any area that you touch, there's only one faculty that we see works. And that is when you use the mind. And nothing else. You don't have any evidence for anything else. What? Yeah. Of course, mystics will tell you that there's one certain miraculous things. But the only problem is that when put to the test, you're unable to ascertain such things. Moreover, I mean, in today's world, you see. That science has done more through human knowledge than any mystic could imagine. Imagine a mystic would imagine he'd do a great feat if he'd fly from one place to another. But man through his chachmas has been able to create a jet that can transport hundreds of people from one place to another. His knowledge, human knowledge, has been able to do more than any mystic would even imagine. But I'm telling you that, of course, we could see today. But years ago, I mean, you weren't able to see it, but a person was a chacham, even in those days, was able to see that the only reliable faculty that man has is chacham. Chacham is something which is the only thing we see that we have. And any person who looks at it objectively will have to come to that conclusion. And that's what I'm off for. What does man have? And the only thing that he sees that he has that is of value is wisdom. There's nothing else but knowledge. That's what he says. Okay? That's his premise. An objective premise. Okay? There's an emotional attitude in man to consider Chachma as being secular. But Chachma isn't secular. Chachma is Chachma Solokin. It's not a secular phenomenon. Okay. And that, as a matter of fact, that's the essence. That's what Rishonim say. What is the Chachma Solokin? Take a look at Rishonim. There's a Rabban. Well, it's almost him as the part of man which perceives Chachma, all the things. Okay. So, and it applies. The Adati Gamani Shemikre Echad Yukre Eskula. Well, my can you believe it? Can you get sugar in Ukraine? You don't know how many years you're there. But you got to believe it, you can't go. So what do you say? But then, what happens then? But then the next step is, okay, the chachma really is the thing. So then this is the great thing for man. So then he takes the search that man is using for Yisroel, and he applies it to chachma. He says, so then that is the end of the great search. This is it. I am a great chachma. Okay? So if chachma is greatness in man, we could worship chachma. We should worship you and the chachma. This is a great thing. And we say, this is the great man. This is not 1 second. But then he says, but you see, that if you take a look around with it, you see, it's not true. Why? Because the chachma was so great. So then how is it possible that the great chacham lived the same amount of years as a regular person who dies? And that's it. Where's the greatness? Where do you see the greatness? So what he's saying is that you will not be able to take the natural trend of the human psyche, the natural drive, and merely attach it to chacham, and then you're going to find the solution. It's not going to work. Because the drive is looking for something great, and it's looking for something really that's dependable, that lasts, that exists, that continues to exist, not something that is only temporary, just exists for a short amount of time. And you see, the chachma and tzur both die. So you say, mikrechad ikrechum. So where's the greatness of chachma? So again, the normal human drive, which is looking for the yisron, in terms of practical life, will not be satisfied with the answer of chachma, because that problem is going to continue. That problem is going to come. What was it? That's what I mentioned. What was that? Was the story of Esav? What was the day that Esav returned? Avram Avinu died. That was it. Va'pagam mi'ezek din bo shezaken. That's it. Okay. That's what it is. Because when he saw that the great man, that's the great thing, he's dead now. So apparently there's no use in the world. He stopped looking for the Esav in that direction, and he went out in the other direction. That's him.
But
this argument is false. Why is it false? Because even though somebody dies, but no, the wise person is not remembered like the fool. The fool is dies and is gone. The wise person goes on, right? The wise person goes on. So there, that's the emotion that should satisfy you, right? That's the next step. That's the next step. What is that verse now? B'shekvor hayomim haboim hakol nishkach. V'eich yom ha'shachach b'masir. But no, in the future days, everything is forgotten. And how can the wise man die with a fool? You're not going to save it by, you're not going to save it through your history. Because eventually, everything is gone. And therefore, and the moment you admit that there's a time that everything is gone, then there's nothing is left. From what I don't remember what yet. The question is whether the Chazal seem to hold that way. Chazal say Sheishis. He'll do it. Rabban holds it's not. Okay, alright. Let's forget about the Rabban right now. But the point is, from what I understand from astronomy, it's not permanent. Because apparently eventually the sun is gonna explode. Okay. But after a certain amount of years. Excuse me. All right. Could be. I'm not gonna talk about it. But I'm not gonna say. But the point is like this. either you could accept this price. It's a machlokes. It's a machlokes of Rishonim. Chazal seem to say sheishes alfei shati havahayama. So Chazal seem to say there will be an end. There will be an end. It's not going to go on eternally. All right? It's not going to go on eternally. You sure Ramban is there? Yeah, Ramban is there. Okay. Well, you don't have to be, fans of the Ramban, oh, yeah. Okay. But if you learn like the Ramban, and like the Chazal seem to say, so it means that eventually everything's going to be gone. Eventually everything. And if a person can't tolerate that idea, I want you to know, it's not because he owes much in the Ramban. It's just the most in his difficult itself. Okay? So if you say like the Ramban, so the pasuk is Ketuba, which means if you really want to be honest with yourself and you're looking for eternity, so you will not be satisfied with a partial eternity. Okay. Eternity means limitless. And therefore, if you can anticipate in your mind, imagine in your mind a time when everything is gone, and everything man is done, and all of the compass, everything just goes up in a ball of fire, and that's it. Everything's gone, all the records, that's it. If you anticipate such a time, then you're not going to be able to save yourself, even with the idea that the Chacham left over a heritage, because that's also going to be gone. Okay. But of course, we're asking you, according to the how the Rambam learned the prophet. Okay, I say you don't have to learn the prophet. There are certain individuals that become part of history. It is true, but you're dishonest if you say that that's really the example of history, because not every Chacham is part of history. Many, many Chachamim that are not a part of history. That's what the Gemara says about this. When the Kiva encountered this person, who was learned in his room, a big gutter, and he asked him a question, and he couldn't answer it. And he said, "You're the Kiva, the famous Kiva." So you see that not every Chacham has a Shrecha, says a piece of a shame. You became a famous person. Okay. But you wanted Zachar to be a Rabbi Bacha. That's what he told him. To be a herder of cattle. But very insulting fellow. But the point is, he was a great Chacham. Nobody knew about him. Wouldn't be that encounter with the people. Wouldn't even know about it. So the point is to maintain that the advantage of the Chacham is that he leaves over a legacy is also false. It's only with regard to very, very few people. One out of... Yeah, but that's true. But that is really the foolish thing to shoot for. Because it's one out of billions that has it. And besides that, the reason that he has it is not necessarily because of the Chachma. It's because of other reasons. It's not inherently because of Chachma. All right? So therefore, most of the Chachamim, 99% of the Chachamim, history, you become part of history because of certain laws of history that dictate that certain individuals are at certain positions, and they become part of history, but not because of the individual per se. It's like the Gemara says in Bracha, that a person should take a look at his door. If his door has Chachamim, then he should withdraw. He shouldn't push himself in the forefront of the generation. Withdraw, sit and learn by yourself. Don't become famous. There's no value of fame in Yadav. No value of fame in Yadav. But if a person sees that his door needs him, then on the contrary, he should go out. He should go out. Go to the forefront. But the point in Chazal is that there is no value. Being part of history is not a value. It's not a value because it comes in many other, many reasons why, many determinants of being a part of history. So if you're going to say that the Chacham, the advantage of the Chacham is that he leaves a legacy, so it's true. It's true. Every Chacham leaves a legacy. He's not forgotten immediately. But the point is that after a while, the Shekvar Hayomim Aboyim Akol Nishka, after many days, everything's forgotten. Be it one generation, two generations, 100 generations, a Chacham's not going to outlive 100 generations. Not going to, unless he's a part of history. So therefore, you can't satisfy your emotional desire for Chachma by calling in history. Okay? All right. know, now he comes to the next. Now what happens now at this point? This point is a v'sonesias achayim. Ki ra alay ha-masa shenasa tachat ha-shemesh. Ki ha-kol hevel ha-rosh ruach. Sonesi means the next step is it has a hatred towards life. Because the, in other words, the, what he's saying here is that an emotion cannot just be destroyed. You can't destroy an emotion. An emotion is a source of energy which has to express itself in either a positive or a negative form. And there's no way just to sculpt the emotion and just to remove it. Impossibility. So first he was very enthused about life because he was following the fantasy. But then when he made his discovery that there's no real way to salvage it, so now what happens? So now he's filled with sinna. With hatred. Hatred towards the towards life, and hatred towards his work and towards his accomplishment. Because the natural thing is that the emotion has to be expressed up in some way. And there's a conversion process. You'll see that people will hate people, they get in arguments with people, if they hate them very much, it's based upon the fact that they had a close relationship. There's no relationship, there's no emotion of love towards that person, so then they don't, then there's no hatred, just indifference. But once there's a, now really the fantasy of immortality is gone, but there's still something left. What's left is like this, that at least the work that he's, at least the effort that he's put in, if he could have some satisfaction, that at least the effort that he's put in would be, will receive some appropriate type of, find some appropriate type of expression, and he'd be happy. In other words, if he works very hard, he toils very hard, so if he enjoys it, if he enjoys the benefits of it, that's fine, you see? But the only problem is, that in order for him to achieve anything, it's not enough just to acquire a small amount. The person can't live in a very big way for a short time, because in order to live in a big way, he has to accumulate, tremendous accumulation. Then he dies, and he leaves over that accumulation. Okay? So he says, so at least if he would think that what he did, at least, he worked, he didn't work for nothing. So therefore, after he dies, whatever effort he put in, we'll have some satisfaction out of the effort he put in, because at least it'll be according to the way he wishes it, according to his wishes. So he put in an effort, so therefore at least somebody should enjoy it that he wants to enjoy it. But then he mentions even that is not to be found. That's already away from fantasy. It's more in the reality level. It works, it could be something, so he wants that it should be used properly. It's a natural desire. So that he says no. He says even that is impossible. Why? Because she'anichenu l'adam she'yacharai. U'mi yodea chocham yosocho v'yish la'pachol amoli she'amaltim she'cham tachal shemesh gam ze'elo. Alright? So what does he mean? He means that even in a practical way, never mind the fantasy of immortality, but even practical immortality, isn't true. Because practical immortality would mean he's an intelligent person who wants to leave over whatever he has to somebody that he feels. He can't enjoy it anymore, let somebody else enjoy it, that he feels is a value. Okay? So even that is impossible. Why? Because once he's gone, basically they say, who knows if he will be a chacham, if he'll be wise, or be a fool. What do you mean by this? Why not? He'll leave an intelligent person? No. But the answer is, that once a person's out of his room, there's no control. No one knows what is it. No one knows. We take a look at other situations, we'll see that a person has no control over what is going to happen after he's gone, once he's out of the picture. So no matter how good he will, he works out, he there's no way that he really can control it. Once he's gone, mi yodea. It's a big unknown. And it's true, maybe he will be, maybe he will. Sometimes it might work out, sometimes it doesn't work out. But he's saying, what plagues the person is, mi yodea. That's what plagues the person. Who knows? You see? That's the nightmare. He doesn't know. That's the point. So therefore, it comes out that even in terms of practical immortality doesn't even exist. Because even in the practical, there's always the miyodea. The miyodea, if a person who tells him that has to play them, I mean, who knows? There's no way to be sure. Yeah. Who was it? Johnson & Johnson? Is that the one? Johnson? The Johnson Fortune?
Yeah.
That's over in the crackpot. You see? And then this was in the Tigers. And then was it? Okay. Here it is. What? Yeah. Where is it? What's over the Lunatic? Where are you looking for? Where's the Lunatic? What? Somewhere, yeah. That's the Neo there. That's the Neo there. Okay.
The problem is
Neo
there.
They
know them.
They know. That's true. If you're lucky, it's Neo there. Sometimes the person takes a look at his progeny and he's there already. That's it. So then he goes into the next. Then after this state, then he goes into the next emotion. What's the next natural result? It's a bosi ani liyayish esnidu. The next thing is yish. Yish. And it yish means total abandonment, total depression. That's yish. So the emotion runs the gamut. First it starts off with excitement, anticipation, you see. Then it's converted to hatred. And the final result of the emotion is abandonment and depression. That's yish. Sabosi goes around, it circles around, the emotion circles around, so it takes on the form of you. Akola almost a multi tahatakola. Alright? And that's after the fact that there's no reason, he says again, Kyeshan Shamal Bakhma Vadasa Tisham, Lodam Shlo Amal Bo Yitnelo Shoto, Gamza Hevel Vala Rabba. He may hova Lodam Akola Mala Vayni Vashu Amal Tahatakola. Alright? Okay. That's the final lesson for the month. Okay. So the last point that we mentioned was that the emotions go through the gamut, and finally, ultimately, they turn to despair. We're up to base kafala. All right. Now, it's difficult to tell us because a lot of times it looks like he's repeating himself, but each time he says it really is a different idea. If you think it's repetition, that means you didn't get the idea. Now he says like this: Kiyesh Adam kafala. Kiyesh Adam she'amalo b'chochma v'das u'v'cheshon, because there's a person whose work is done with wisdom and with knowledge. And with skill and ability. And to a person who didn't put any effort into it, he will give his chelik, the one who put the effort and work into it, will give his chelik to somebody else that didn't put the work into it. Gamze hevavara rabba. This is also a terrible evil. So what is he saying here? More really than he said before. He said just before that he hated all his work because he didn't like the idea that he has to leave whatever, all his accomplishments, he has to leave to someone who comes after him. So even in the practical sense, he doesn't know who that person is going to be or what's going to happen. So what is he getting over here? And then he seems to repeat again, Ki mehova l'odam b'cholam molo v'rayon libo. Because what is there to a man with all his work and all his intelligence and all his thoughts? His planning, his strivings, Shehu Omel Tachas Hashem, he works under the sun. Alright? I think what he means here is a different, under the same area, but a different point. What he's saying is like this. What he's saying is that, you see, an accomplishment can only be an accomplishment if the activity is something that's necessary in order to achieve the objective. So then you could say that I achieved the objective because I engaged in the activity and therefore I accomplished something. But if the same objective can be achieved without the effort and without the work, so then the accomplishment is removed from it, is destroyed. You say, what kind of accomplishment is it? In other words, if it would be so that the only one that attained the objective is the one that put in the work, so then at least the person can say, look, I attained the objective and I accomplished a great deal because I put in the work, and that's how I, and therefore I accomplished something. But if I could show you another individual who didn't do anything, and he has the same thing that this other person did, where's the accomplishment? If the rules of the game were that the only way to gain the objective is through the effort and through the accomplishment, is it through the effort rather, then it's an accomplishment. But if a person can have the same objective without the work, so where's the accomplishment? So here he's talking about a person, here he's talking about physical accomplishment, material accomplishment. So what he's saying is that it's not just the fact that I work and there's no benefit. Because of there isn't even, first of all, he refuted the idea of the fantasy of immortality. Then there's not even any practical immortality. But now he's taking it one step further. He's saying, let's forget about immortality. Well, let's speak about just the during a lifetime, during a person's lifetime. So at least let him have a sense of accomplishment during his lifetime. I'll say, look, I worked very hard. In the meantime, I accumulated this great fortune, right? So he says, yeah, but there's always one problem with that. When he sees another person that just inherited more than he worked and he accumulated. You see? So the objective of all of his efforts, what's the objective to have this accumulation? Another person just got it by doing nothing. So therefore it removes from the individual the whole sense of accomplishment. Because what's the accomplishment? The accomplishment that I was able to bring this about? Yeah, but the other fellow just got it by chance, by luck. You see, so the only, exactly, but that's nonsense. There's no basis for that. Right? There's no basis for such a thing. There's no basis.
Opens it up and you know he looks up some more things that want to do, and another guy really year after year after year really has to struggle.
I tell you, the guy that struggles is not going to be that when he sees a genius next time. He's not going to be too happy. He has to be that way. It can't be otherwise. I mean, a person can't be blind. He sees what's happening around him. So he must, the moment he sees somebody else gets it very easily, then he has to feel frustrated. He has to feel frustrated. It's impossible otherwise. It has to be that way. Yeah. What else is it? But what else is it?
The work ethic
is absolutely nonsense. There's no basis for such a thing. I mean, it's just a fantasy of imagination. It's an idea of the world. It's based on nonsense. A person who worked hard, that is the great man. I'd like to see one of these people who worked very hard. If you show them how they can get the same objective without doing anything, I'd like to see how quickly they turn it down and say, no, I insist on working and killing myself for the next 25 years. It doesn't make any sense. Nonsense. It's an excuse. It's a false rationalization. It's a nonsensical way to console oneself, but it's ridiculous. One of the advertisements is that we do it the old-fashioned way. We earn it. What do I care? He earns it. All I want to know is I'm going to make some money. I can't be there. He's continuing now along following the same idea. First he broke down the fantasy of immortality, he broke down the practical immortality, and now he's showing you that even during a person's lifetime, the very idea of a great conquest is nonsensical. Because the fact is, in reality, there are people that that achieve the same goal without doing anything. So that's the final breakdown of the person's feeling of accomplishment. That's the final breakdown, even during his lifetime. Forget about the future. He takes it one by one. Knocks them down one by one. That's the order. Okay? Now, he goes a little bit further into the idea of the work effort. He says like this. Ki chol yomov mach'ovim v'chas inyono, gam balayla lo shochav libo, gam zehevelo. He says because all his days are mach'ovim is pains, v'chas and anger, and even at nighttime he wasn't able to rest, wasn't able to sleep. His heart wasn't able to rest. See? What does it mean? He needs to say it like this. It's a further disproof of the idea of a work effort. Because he says, maybe you'll say that the working itself is good. No, it can't be good. Because any striving, by definition, has to have pain. Because when you're striving, it means you don't have what you want. By definition. As long as you're striving, it means you're missing something. So that's what he says. He's always in a state of pain because he doesn't have what he wants. He says, Vachas in Yana. Vachas is anger. What does anger mean? Anger always represents the idea that reality is not conforming to what the person's inner wishes are. That's what anger is. When a person gets angry, it means he can't tolerate the fact that nothing's going along with the way he wants it. That's the expression of anger. When a person gets angry and he destroys something. I mean, he can't tolerate the... that's why the Gemara says it's a person that does it is like you over to the bazaar. Because it means that he's not willing to accept reality. He's not willing to accept reality. Why? Because the point is he can't tolerate it. He's trying to destroy the external world. That's why a person does such a thing. Because he's angry at the external world that it's not going along with his internal desires and wishes. Not conforming to his own plan. So he says, so you cannot. So during this period where the person is striving, he's in a state of pain. Because first of all, he's in pain because he doesn't have what he wants. And secondly, reality, he has to plan because reality isn't conforming to his desires.
What the?
Yeah, the Ibn Ezra says it. He says, Kol yonav b'chev nefesh v'chas, b'avur shelo yiskinu lo dvarav tamit, t'fi machshavta. Because things don't go along according to his thoughts. You see? He says, Gam balayla lo shachav libo. What does it mean? He says, even at nighttime he won't be able to rest. See, this is where Aristotle says that some people maintain that at least one third of everybody's life is equal. Whether he's a king, or whether he's a pauper, or whether he's a wise man, or whether he's a fool, one third of everybody's life is the same when they sleep. But Schleierbell says, no, it's not true. Why? Because even sleep is interrupted by a person's desires. His frustrations are expressed. His wish fulfillment. His frustrations continue even into his sleeping hours. He can't avoid it. So it's not true that one third of his life is equal to the other
even
person.
When he's sleeping,
not true. He can't. Even when he's sleeping, he's in pain. Because even in sleep, the frustrations continue to be experienced. He experiences frustration even when he's asleep, because he can't turn off the desire. So therefore, his entire life during that time is a state of pain. See? That's what he says. That's really basically the end of the picture. That's the end of the picture. Okay. He's showing you the mind isn't a simple machine that he turns off and on due to practicality. The person doesn't have the control over his mind to be able to only use it when it's rational, to use it. But even when he knows it's nonsensical, he keeps on going. But people say, what are you worrying about? Of course the person knows that it's the most futile type of advice is to tell a person not to worry. Of course, everyone knows that. Nobody says, no, I'm worrying because I think it's going to do me some good. Never anybody says it. It's simply impossible to avoid it because the machine keeps yelling. It keeps on striving. So even during his sleeping hours, he's driven. Driven personality. He's a driven personality. Driven personality can't stop the rest. It's out of his control. That's what he's saying.
What does he worry you?
To a warrior?
I'll
give him the same advice that the Rambam gave the Sultan. Learn philosophy and gain knowledge. And then you realize that the things that you preoccupy with don't have any real value. In Beis Chof Gimel, in Chof Dalet, he says, Ein tov ba'odom sheyochal v'shoso v'hero asnafsho tov ba'amolo. Gamzo ro'isiyoni ki miyado l'kimid. Now he says like this, the only good that there can be for a person is, the word rocket is missing, like I'm talking about. The only good that a person can do is to eat and to drink, and to show his soul, to give to his soul the good that he achieved through his work. Because this is the only benefit. But then he says, that's fine up to this point. But then he says a strange thing. Gamzo re'isiyoni, this also I have seen, ki miyad olakimi, that it's from God. Yes. That it's from God. Okay? He says a similar thing in Gimel Yud Gimel. Well, Gam kol adam sheyochal v'shasa v'ro tov v'amalo, matas olakimi. It's a gift of God.
Yeah.
And he says in his base also some of the same thing. Yadati kin tov bum kin l'smach v'asos tov v'chayav. Because he's driven by a senseless desire. But they're all accumulated. So they can't accumulate. Okay. All right. Now, what's the next point? Nicely. Yadati ki'in tov bom, ki'in l'smoach v'lasos tov b'chayav. And now he comes back and he says that the only thing that's good is for a person to be happy and to enjoy his life. He says it again. It's a repetition. V'gam kol odom sheyochal v'shoso, let's see if we understand it. Sheyochal v'shoso v'ro'a tov b'chol amalo, matas elokim hi. Matas elokim hi. Matas elokim hi. Yadati ki chol asher yaseh elokim hu yeh le'olam olof v'im ha'osif u'meilin le'groa. V'olokim osa sheyiru mo'fana. Ma shehoya kvar hu v'asher li'os kvar hoyo v'olokim yivakesh esnedach. Okay. Yeah, what is the next point? Let's see, is there any idea in these next psukim that hasn't been covered already? The gift of God. Okay. What? All of him also men on the grow up. You want it on?
Yeah.
Are you controlling it?
No.
Okay.
You want on or off?
Well, okay. All right. Maybe I don't want to just waste the tape. I'm thinking.
Okay.
I'll put it right on. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Now he's saying something. What are you doing?
Putting a rope in here. So you can turn it on and off.
Oh, okay. Okay. Very good. Yeah. And now he's saying like this. You see, now I think what he's saying is. You see, now he's saying like this. Now he's saying what the true philosophy is. So what is the solution? So what is the solution, really? So here he has the solution. Yadati kiyim tov bum, kiyim l'smoach v'lasos tov b'chayot. He says he came to the recognition, therefore, that there is only one logical solution. The only logical solution is that a person should, you see, kiyim l'smoach v'lasos tov b'chayot. Alright? Now he says like this. Over here, it's different than what he said before. Before he was speaking in terms of a person enjoying himself. The hero, take a look at the Russian. The hero is not show tov b'amolo. That was Beis Chof Dalet. But he should show himself that which is good. He should give himself the benefits of his work. Over here he's saying something else. He's saying, Yadati kien tov bam, that there is no good in following this, in following his nature, which is implanted in him, that attitude of ha'olam. But what is the only good? The only good is l'smach, to enjoy life, for a person to be happy, and to do good during his lifetime. He says l'asos tov. L'asos tov means to do good, means to do good actions. That's the only good that a person can have in life. That is it. There's nothing more. The gam kola odom sheyochal v'shoso v'ro'a tov b'chol amalo matas alakimi. And the only and he says like this. He says, and I know that a person who a person who was able to accomplish this, a person who is able to accomplish this and to live life in that way, that's really the proper way of living life, without any fantasies, but just simply to partake of that which is good and to enjoy the benefits of what he has done. But it says Matas Elokimi. Matas Elokimi means that he has to recognize that even the very ability to do this is a gift of God. Which means that there is no sense of accomplishment even in doing that. In other words, like this. What he's saying is that the person that lives according to the true philosophy, the person that lives according to the true philosophy does not sense any accomplishment in what he has done. There is no sense of accomplishment in that. You see, most people feel that they want to be good or have a good life, because in the back of their mind, what they really want is to be in a state where they can pat themselves on the back and say, I've done something good. I have an accomplishment. He says, no. He says, I realize that the only good, really, is for a person to live a temporal life and to partake of the good, even though it's a temporal one, but to partake of it and realize that that's it. There's nothing more. He says, but I also know that a person who does that has the recognition that matas olekim. He has the recognition, the person who is not in that perfected state, all he sees is that he doesn't feel any sense of accomplishment for what he has done. Because he knows he knows how many phenomena it's dependent upon, and he realizes how little he has really been able, how little is under his control, and how little he has been able to accomplish. And all he could feel actually, is that it's a gift of God. That's the tzaddik, all the tzaddik feels, the experience of the tzaddik is not that he is proud of what he has done. Pride is not really a part of the life, the mental life of the tzaddik. It's not. Because a person who has been able to live in accordance with reality is a person who has knowledge and recognizes how little is dependent upon his own doings, and how much is dependent upon what God has set before him, and therefore his experience is only one thing. It's matas olekim. That's the way he looks at it. You see, it's matas olekim. Of course, even though he has bechira, but predominantly everything that he has is simply straight from God. His intellect, his emotional life. I mean, everything, the person can be crippled with a certain emotion, and I don't care how smart he is, he will not be able to remove himself from that emotion. It's possible. And his physical well-being. Or Chazal say, a person that's shlosha chayim and ayim chayim. The Gemara says, three people, their lives aren't worth anything. One of them is a person that's nisha yisur emotional begufo. A person that has intolerable pain. He's always in pain. He's sick. So it says as chayim inim chayim. So he recognizes the person that has the good life. The Gemara, as a matter of fact, says a person who's too much of a merachim, person who has too much pity on others. The Gemara says so his life is not a life. One of the Chazal said that he has that trait. He has that midah. He can't, which makes him unhappy. Makes him unhappy. Yeah. So he says. So therefore, he says, the really wise person, even the person, he's discussing man's desire for happiness in this world, which is basically what every person is after. And he says that he knows that the only good is really the smoach, v'lachos tov b'chayav, that's the best life. But also, he says, gam kol ha'odam sheyochal v'shasar v'ro'a tov b'chal ha'malo, anyone who has done that, who has been able to reach that level, matas olekim. All he could say is, if he has been able to achieve that, it's matas olekim. It has nothing to do with it. I mean, he can't say it has nothing to do. Of course, he's been responsible in a certain sense, but the predominance of his experience, what predominates his mental life, is all matas olekim. He was born into a certain situation. He has certain inherent capabilities. And he was able to have certain opportunities, that were set before him. Without those opportunities, he would never have the knowledge even that he gained. And if he wouldn't have the knowledge, he would live like a fool, like Rabbi Akiva says. Ilav Hayoma, if it wasn't for that day, Kamakiv Minyasrika Bashuga. So if it wasn't for Matan Torah, so what would he be? What would he be? A person who is honest and who has knowledge realizes that there's no such thing as pride in the realm of reality of the Chacham. It just doesn't exist. He's simply overcome by the whole creation, and he sees that everything that surrounds him is simply what God has laid before him. It's true he's exercises the Bechira properly, but the exercising of the Bechira alone is not what's responsible for the situation. There are too many factors that are outside of his control. That's it. Like Chazal say, they're different factors. So therefore, the attitude of the person who does succeed and does have the little happiness that man can have, which is outside the fantasy, but rather in reality there is a certain happiness there, that person has to feel, comes to the conclusion, that's the feeling, that's the sense. So therefore what he's saying is like this: he's continuing on the same path that he started before, after the breakdown of the fantasy of immortality, after the breakdown of Lakol's Man, which shows there is no attitude, and then the Olam Belibam. He says, but there is, the only attitude that there is only one true attitude there is. It's not just a lichen. That's it. Yes. To the kachna tzata. Yes. Yeah, yeah, it's same type of thing. Right. Nothing. Smata silicon.
It's a lower level.
It's a lower level, but the same type of thing. Yeah, that's true.
If there is some recognition.
Kilakachna charta means that's the kilakachna charta attacks the different. Right. Yeah. Now, yeah, Donnie brought up a chazal in Perkei Avos. It says, in Lamadata Torah Harbe, Al Tachzik Tova La'atzmacha kilakachna charta. You learned a lot of Torah, so you shouldn't be proud of yourself, because that's what you were created for. What that means is that even in the exercising of your own Bechira, in order to achieve happiness, you need a lot of factors. Not everybody's able to do it. But even insofar as you exercise a Bechira, a person does not deserve any pride. Because kilakach not sorta. It means because that is the good. So what did you do? You didn't do anybody a favor. You didn't do God a favor. What you did was, you did that which is best for your nature. So where is there room for pride? Mm-hmm. So even in the exercising of the Bechira, there is no room for pride. All you could say is that actually, I did that which was most beneficial for myself. And what he's not going to get a Yashikaya. There's no Yashikaya he's going to get. That's not the only good that he gains out of it is that he did that which is correct. So that's why even in the exercise of the Bechira there is no room for pride. The Chacham does not feel any sense of accomplishment. He's a person who lives in the life of the good, and essentially what is why the life of the Chacham really is one. There's one catchphrase that really typifies the Chacham. That he feels a sense all the time of Matas Alekin. That's it.
Aren't you
unhappy
that you didn't accomplish more?
He says,
no, it doesn't bother him.
The main thing is that the attitude of the soul was
knowledge.
Right. That's true. But the point is, he's talking here about, you see, but the Shlomo is not just talking about the perfection of the soul. He's talking about human life and happiness in human life, which involves really more than just the perfection of the soul. And Chazal say, Mishi so much of the Gufa doesn't have a good life. Doesn't mean he doesn't have a chesed in Olam Haba, and it doesn't take away from Olam Haba a person that doesn't have a good life here. But over here, Shlomo is talking about the good life over here. Yeah, the good life over here is possible. Kim was small, plus stuff is possible. But if it happens, it's matas over here. It's not under his control. That's it.
So the
Astar. Yes.
Was perhaps connected with amounts of the God from the Shah Tamim, because the God from the Shah.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yigati matasi. That's Yigati matasi means. Yigati Matsasi means that the Gros says it shot over there. The Gros says that Yigati Matsasi means that a person works very hard on an idea, works on a concept, and suddenly
It occurs to him. It's not really, somehow or other, it's not directly related to his effort. Even in the mental phenomena. Even the mental phenomena. Yeah, it's like a brainstorm. I mean, a brainstorm, a person doesn't feel too much fright. Well, that's why learning is a very insecure. Learning in general is a very insecure activity. It's an insecure activity. If you're a very secure person, you can't be a great thinker. Because if you're a secure person, it means you want to put in X amount of work and you expect these results. It doesn't work that way around. You can put in work and work and work and you won't get anything. And then all of a sudden, something occurs. Why that something occurred? Certain connections took place. I mean, you don't know what they were. There's no guarantee when you start a sugya if you're going to be able to work out the sugya. I mean, it could be you're not going to get any additional sugya. I mean, of course, the greater a person is, the more his chances are. But in a particular way, there's no direct relationship. There's no direct relationship. Person has to even in thinking, if a person wants a sense of pride in his thought processes, he can't achieve it. Because when a thought comes to you in that manner, you can't think to yourself, it's because of my work. Because you see the way it just occurred to me. It occurred. He was walking down the street. It occurred to him. If he hadn't been in a certain time, a certain place, a certain state of mind, a certain frame, it wouldn't have happened. And there's no way to guarantee how it's going to happen or when it's going to happen. And many times you can work on a sugya one time and the idea can occur to you. And 10 years later, you could sit down and work over the same sugya. It will not occur to you. And you simply will not gain the idea. There is no way. When a person is fortunate enough to see a good idea, he has to feel the idea. That's the grosses, the idea of matsasi. Even in the thinking process, it's not constructed in a way that lends itself to our sense of accomplishment. That's what the gross is. The gayatri matsasi, even the thinking process is set up in a way that doesn't lend itself to the sense of accomplishment. But there really is no room. There's only one feeling, that's Mata Salagir, that's it. Yep.
The Sara Logan Malchus, right?
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Did they feel that was Matnas Hashem also?
Well, I understand that too.
No, because in other words, the guy should enjoy his life, right? And these guys came to an untimely end.
So what's it got to do with it?
Well, at that particular point, does he assume that that's a gift of God?
Yeah, it is, because you see, he doesn't have it, so obviously it's a gift of God. If a person, that's all it is, a gift of God, means that it's dependent upon God. So therefore, you see a person, they were tzaddik, all of them, yet they didn't have it. So you see, it's a gift of God, it's not dependent upon their doing. That's precisely the point. That proves the point.
I don't understand the point.
No, because you're showing me a case where
a guy does all the correct actions.
And still he won't have it.
No.
So now when he has it, so it's not because he did the correct actions, it's because it's a gift of God.
You're asking on the other people, he doesn't
want to know. You're asking, it's not just, is that what you're asking?
I'm not talking about it.
He's saying that a person, you ask a lot of kashas, I'm telling you. There were chazal that suffered, that were in pain, and they learned Torah, they gave all the energies in Torah. They didn't have this pasuk. The gam kol adam asher yochov v'shosav roa tov b'chalam ala. They wanted to zechut to that pasuk. So they wanted zechut to the pasuk. So what? He doesn't need to say, by the way. He doesn't need to say that if you're not going to be zechut to that pasuk, that you shouldn't do the good. So they wanted zechut to elamazah. So that's it. They didn't have elamazah. What? I understand the problem. And on the contrary, he's saying that the person that is what Shlomo is talking about, the good life. Everybody's interested in the good life. The good life cannot be brought about solely by your own efforts. Your efforts have something to do with it, in a small way. Yeah, galena vadita in the flow of Torah Zohar. That's right. Tefila galena vadita in the flow of Torah Zohar. That a person should be mispalo for chacham. Atachan lanam das. You have to mispalo for chacham. So chacham is something which is not completely not controlled. That we can put in an effort, but you might not see the idea. But if a person... Yeah. Shlomo Malach is not here to give a simple philosophy of life. He's showing you the realities of life. You have to be a realist. Not everybody is ready for Kehelet. Yes?
Why a person has to say that?
Well,
there's not going to be a feeling of why he has to.
The ultimate thing? That's his nature. You want to know why he has the why he has his fantasies and why he goes on that way?
No, no, I understand. I have the baby, but my first fantasy about it, you still talk about it.
But you're saying
about
doing it.